So Rav Eliyahu Kitov writes, we're doing the Jew in his home, and I want us to learn chapter 11 and chapter 12, I'm hoping to accomplish both tonight, about faithfulness and dedication. That's the subject of chapter 11. And he begins with a quote from the Torah. The Torah describes marriage in the book of Bereishis, in Genesis. When the Torah describes the original form of marriage, the description is, Al ken therefore, Ya'azov ish et aviv et imo. A person leaves his father and his mother, v'davak be'ishto, and he bonds with his wife, v'ayu levasar echad. They become one flesh. Our sages taught, 40 yom kodem yitzirat avlad, 40 days before the fashioning of the fetus, bat kol, a heavenly voice, yotzet v'omeret, goes out and declares, bat ploni leploni, the daughter of so-and-so will be the wife to so-and-so. And when a man and a woman come into the covenant of marriage, Hayoshev b'shamayim kaviyachol shutaf imahim, the one who dwells above in heaven, so to speak, he becomes a partner with them. Bivritam v'noten latokef, he becomes one with the pact. He gives it validity. Chazal say this is the source for how careful we must be with kibud av v'aim. How careful must one be with honoring one's parents? In Shulchan Aruch it says, specifically, the beginning of Hilchos Kibud Av V'Aim, a person must take great care with this mitzvah. Explains the Gra, the source for this is the Talmudic explanation, that there are three partners in the fashioning of a human being, the father, the mother, and God. God, together with the father and mother, forms man. God is part of that pact. God is what gives that pact of marriage validity. Chas v'shalom hem meferim et habrit, if God forbid, they annul the pact. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tova et elbono velbon habrit mimefereya. God demands the shame of the pact and his own shame from the people who do not live up to the pact. Mi yamod lifanav bedin bota sha'a? Who could stand up to God in judgment at that time? Ve'en rachamim bedin kashezeh shel hafarat brit. And there is no mercy when God takes a person to task if he was unfaithful to his covenant with his wife, if he was unfaithful to that covenant. The verse describes, "Nichretu anefashot haosot mikerav amam," those souls who breach the covenant between husband and wife will be cut off from the rest of the nation. Mot yumat hanoefa noafet, the adulterer and the woman who committed adultery should both be put to death. Keshem shen kitz leonsham shel mefirei habrit, just as there is no end, be it in this world or the world to come, to the exacting judgment that God takes from people who annul the covenant, so too there is no limit to the good wages that God has in store for people who maintain the covenant, for people who are faithful to their responsibilities to the marriage. We have a rule, whatever you see in Chazal and in Torah for bad, you should know that the reverse for good is much better. God's desire to do good for those who do right by far exceeds the punishment for those who do wrong. And if you see how great is the punishment for one who is a traitor to his marriage, from here we can derive how much more wages there are for a person who is faithful. Kama gadol ba'olam haba uva'olam hazeh, how great it is in the world to come and in this world. B'ramen lecha sachar tov ba'olam hazeh gadol min hasachar hazeh. To the extent that we would say, there are no greater wages in this world than these wages. Shakol yecholim niskot elav. These are wages that everyone could merit. Shnei kufim nasim adam echad. Two bodies become one Adam. Remember, Adam in Torah terminology is the man and the woman together. That's when you become Adam. Achudim ze bazeh udvukim bin shama achat. They are unified. They are bound into one neshama, belev echad, into one heart. Umisham, and from that single heart, that single neshama, mekor chayutam shel shnehem. That is where they derive the life that is both of them. Ichud ze shebalev uvanshama, this unification of heart and soul, hu shemafreu marbeotam, that's what causes them to flourish. ומעמיד להם תולדות ודורות קיימים, and establishes future generations, שיונקים גם הם מאותו השורש האחיד. The future generations also nourish, they also get their nourishment from that unified root. When you guys build a good home, you're not just building something good for you and your wife, you're building something that all future generations will gain nourishment from. Think of a tree. You plant the roots well, it starts growing correctly in good soil, the rest of the growth benefits. It's not just an investment for the moment. The future generations also nurse from that unified root of the neshama and the lev that was unified in those that brought them to the world. Hanemanut v'amsirut shebalev, the faithfulness and dedication within the heart, domim nishnei morot gdolim, they're like two great luminaries that give light and purity to everything the body does. Are you guys following what he's saying? So, huh? Okay. So let's summarize what we saw till now. Even before we come to the world, God saw fit to declare who our wives would be. We live in an age where people are very focused on realizing their own potential. You have girls who will not date till they're 35 and have 2 degrees and a PhD under their belt because they have to realize themselves. Well, the Torah taught us that part of realizing ourselves is in marriage. A major part of realizing who we are is we in the context of marriage. I am a half a person. It's not that I'm a car with half a tank. It's that I'm a car with half an engine, two of the four wheels. Every person, every individual, before he's married, he's got half an engine. It's not that he has half a tank. It's not, I'm a car, I can only drive half the distance. No, I can't really drive the way I should. Before we are fashioned, before the fetus takes form, 40 days beforehand, there's a declaration in heaven, who's he going to bond with? Who's going to be his wife? Obviously, part of the forming of the bond, part of the godly plan for the lives we are to lead, is about who our partner is going to be. And the bond with our partner is so important that it is declared even before we are formed. Even before the fetus takes form, it is declared who his partner will be. So then this bond with our spouse is something that's very important in heaven. It's not just a way of bringing children to the world. It's not just a way of life. It is life. Life is about living as a married person. Chazal said many descriptions about what is life when one isn't married. And the summary of it all is, you're not an Adam. A person only becomes a human being with the great term of Adam when he is married. So when we begin a discussion of faithfulness and dedication within marriage, we have to understand that we're talking about faithfulness and dedication to being an Adam. And this perspective is critical. People sometimes speak about their spouses and they gauge, what's she worth to me? Well, let's see. She does my laundry. She does my cooking. She picks up the kids. She's not such a great cook. But it's nice to go to parties as a married person. You know, they start gauging. What do I get out of this marriage? That's all wrong. What Rav Eliyahu Kitov described is not the marriage of tzaddikim. It is the marriage that every person should be aspiring to. It is what every marriage looks like if it is run correctly. When he describes that you have two neshamot that unify into one, and that unification is what illuminates everything they do, that is where they all take their strengths from, that's a description of every one of our marriage, Be'ezrat Hashem. It's not something deep, far out, tzaddikim. you, me, all of us. That's the type of marriage we're supposed to have. Hashem describes one who breaks the covenant between him and his wife as the Torah describes someone who will get the death penalty in this world and the world to come. An adulterer, man, woman, they get the death penalty here and they get cut off in the world to come. By the same token that the punishment for breaching the covenant is in this world and the world to come, the inverse, the converse of that is that when you live up to the covenant, when you build the marriage correctly, the wages are not only in the world to come, they're in this world as well. And there's nothing better than that. And that's basically what he said. Guys, now we all together?
Mm-hmm. Was that what you said before?
I think so.
Wow. Yeah. I understood that time.
Yes, sir.
How do we reconcile the idea that you get a woman based on your level and that she's chosen before you were conceived?
The match between a man and a woman, if it's the first zivug, is like the match between a person's arm and his shoulder. You know, it fits. It's a part of you. You can start looking at the arm and say, you know, maybe it would be nicer if it were longer. Maybe it would be nicer if it were stronger. But it fits. And it works just right. And you don't even have to think about it. And a person might say, you know, if I had bigger hands, I could build bigger houses. If I had smaller hands, I could knead better bread. I could make better noodles, better pasta. I could do a lot of things if my hands were different. But at the end of the day, it fits perfect, Baruch Hashem, right? We function beautifully with the hands we were given. By the same token, the spouse that we are allotted before we are born fits perfectly. Now, how we grow with her, and where we are in life, that's something which we will develop together. But it's like a part of who I am. It's not a question of, maybe I'll be a bigger tzaddik or a smaller tzaddik. That's all true. But you don't say, because I'm a bigger tzaddik, I should have a different left hand. Right? That doesn't change. Well, the wife is an extension of who the person is. And it's like, if you imagine a piece in a puzzle. So our neshamot, our personalities, have a certain shape like a puzzle. And the wife that was supposed to fit before we were created fits perfectly. And now we have a responsibility to grow with that. Very often we don't like how it fits. You know, this guy, he's got a long protrusion in his puzzle. So the matching piece has to have a long indentation in the puzzle. Take a guy with a lot of laziness. So he needs the corresponding wife is going to be someone who's going to work with him and get him to do things. Some days he says, Joey, why is she so ambitious? My neighbor's wife, she doesn't kick him out of the bed in the morning. Yeah, well, your neighbor doesn't stay in bed every morning till 10 o'clock in the morning, right? You needed a wife who is that. That's exactly what matches you. What matches us perfectly sometimes doesn't find favor in our eyes. Sometimes it gets on our nerves, but that doesn't mean it doesn't match us.
Should we listen to the wrong advice when we think to ourselves that let me become a greater tzaddik and then I'll date, maybe I'll get a better... So is that from the Yetzer Hara?
That's a long conversation. Bezachem, Thursday night, if you want a fitting answer, I can try, but not with the time allotted here. Yes?
I was going to say something just in response to what you asked. I would say you don't even know where your level is until you're married. You know, because you don't actualize yourself fully. And at some point, you just have to say, look, I think I'm in a good place in my life and I'm ready to date. But I think it's a matter of assessing your level and trying to match someone quantitatively that fits that level. Because it doesn't happen. The other thing I was going to ask is the luminaries. You said something at the end of the first
So Rav Kitov describes that he says that we stopped there when I got the feeling I was reading alone. He says that faithfulness and dedication are like two great luminaries that light up the body and purify everything the body does. When these luminaries exist within the body, then everything a person does has more purity and has more holiness. When you have faithfulness and dedication that light up, they're the light within a person. Notice, we're not talking about the Torah you learn. We're talking about the dedication and faithfulness within the marriage. Those two points, when you have those, they light up everything you do. And then the actions we do, even the actions that can be described as most mundane, going shopping in the store, or other simple actions, they're lit up because they stem from that dedication, from that faithfulness. But if you don't have that, and maybe it is more important to learn this chapter because of that, then what happens is you have two cold, dark bodies. You can have two cold, dark bodies in a marriage. And the Torah teaches us that the union of a marriage, the intimacy within a marriage, can only come when you first have unified hearts, dedication, and faithfulness. And that's the reason I really wanted to learn this chapter. We live in a world that keeps stressing the physical aspects of relationships between two people of opposite genders. You go on a bus, you just look at a billboard, you see all these advertisements, and what do they stress? Nothing. They stress the physical. Someone said, the woman was liberated to become an object of desire. What? Well, if you look outside Judaism, you're going to see that that's what's going on around you. The second women are plastered all over billboards, the second women are stressed to be thinner and have all kinds of unnatural figures, what are they being told? They have no value as a human being, they have value as an object. In Judaism, we don't view it that way. And the truth is that God gave us an action of intimacy between couples which we view as an action of holiness. But it must have these conditions. There must first be a unification of hearts. There must first be a unification of neshamot. And then the action represents what began internally. When you look at the world outside that describes everything externally and everything's physical, then you're looking at animals.
So could you just repeat one of those conditions again before
we said there's the unification, there's faithfulness, dedication, which leads to the unification of the hearts and the unification of the neshamot. And the only difference between a human and an animal is when the bonding is done stemming from a unification of hearts, a unification of two people into one. I'm not talking about the physical. If the physical is a follow-up to the spiritual, then you're being a human being. But the world is stressing the physical externally. I have a hard time, you know. I used to deal in shiduchim, and sometimes we get phone calls from people who don't keep Torah mitzvot yet. So I asked Rav Halberstam Zatzal, and he said we should set them up, even though we know they're going to be in transgression of biblical commandments. Nonetheless, we should set them up. The Torah prohibits it. It's a biblical commandment. A person's not allowed to live with the girl who's a nida and not touch her and all that. You guys know that. But sometimes we get phone calls from people who don't have any concept. They don't keep Shabbos and they don't keep kashrus and they don't keep anything, but they're Jewish and they want to be set up with a Jewish girl. And we set them up. But I find it very hard. You know, I can respect people and I can value people for who they are. But when I hear about dates where the end of the date ends up with something like that, I ask myself, why are they different than animals? You know, a cat goes in the street, smells the feces of another cat, start running after it if it's in heat, so then they mate. If human beings run around the girl, end up on a date, and they end up mating, then I'm sorry, they're no different than the cat and the dog. Maybe less, because the cat and the dog don't have potential for being holy. And we do. So on the one hand, I set people up. I do them that favor when I can. On the other hand, this is one area where I have a very hard time with it. I have a hard time respecting the people. You know, in where I come from, I don't even want to use the word. We describe people who behave like that. And things that when I was a kid, people looked down upon, today have become norms. And I'm not talking about in the from world, I'm talking about in the secular world as well. So, Rav Eliyahu Kitov is really telling us one of the keys to being a holy person. You know, we were given potential for holiness. And we live in a world that takes the holiest actions and defiles them. We view mating, we view couples being together intimately as a time that the Shekhinah rests between them. It's a time where God is there with him. In the Holy of Holies, we had a figurine of a little boy and a little girl. And when the Jews lived up to their tasks, then they bonded as a couple would. And between those two figurines, between those two angels, the heavenly voice came out. We don't view it as a cat, two cats running after one another. We don't say a human is a more sophisticated animal. We view it as the holiest act. And by the same token, the act which can be the most defiled, which can lead to the death penalty. Yes?
I was going to ask, when you do these shiurim with the war from, these turn into marriages or displays, usually?
That's up to them, no? I don't have control
over
that.
Any success stories?
That depends on how you gauge success. If you're asking me if I ever was at a chuppah of any of them, not yet. Not yet. But I don't know if that's how you gauge success.
That is?
Okay, I'm not sure. So there are more details, but I think we're... skip over them a little bit and go on to the next chapter. Yes, sir.
Rabbi, isn't it a good thing to do because you could look at an example in the Torah, how if you would set these people up and they do get married and they could have children who are Baal Teshuvah. So you can just look at Korach and his wife, who they did terrible sins, but their children, they were they did tshuva, and we even say. After Davin, or during Davin, the Shir HaYom, we say the Korach's sons.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing to set them up. If I thought it was a bad thing, I wouldn't do it. I'm just saying it's very hard for me to view people who behave this way and view them differently than animals. I feel like, on the outside, they're wearing clothing, they're walking around like human beings. But inside their homes, they're behaving like animals. You know, I don't see the difference between that and a cat jumping on another cat because it smelled its feces and it's in heat. I don't see the difference. I maybe I'm missing something.
It's hard times growing up today.
That's true. It's very hard. That's true. A Rosh Yeshiva said 30 years ago, I don't remember who it was, he said that the average child, when walking from his house to the corner grocery shop, sees more immodest pictures than a Jew in Europe saw his whole life.
No doubt.
A short walk. His house to the corner.
Also clothing, actually real life, it's even worse. When
it's... Right. Right, right. It's true. I guess we must have great potential if God gave us such a great task. I agree. It's very difficult. But an intelligent person also chooses what tests to put himself into. An intelligent person won't put himself in situations where he might be put to the test. When guys leave Machon Meir, I always beg them, go to a room where you'll have two other roommates who are from. Don't put yourself to the test of being in a room where you're all alone. Don't put yourself to the test of being in a room where there's internet and you're all alone. You want to have internet in your house? Great. Sometimes you need it. I understand. Put it in the center of the house where everyone sees what you're doing. Don't sit on the internet late at night when no one's seeing what you're doing. A person has to be smart and avoid temptation. I agree with you that we live in a day and age where you don't even have to step out of your house and you could have all the temptation in the world, right? I mean, you just turn on that machine, right?
Rav Aviner says that it's like the laws of Yichud apply there.
Oh, okay. Chazal tell us who is a wealthy person? A person who's happy in his lot. And Chazal quote the pasuk, Yegia kapecha, the toils of your hands, kitochel, for you will consume. Ashrecha, praised are you, v'tovlach, and it's good for you. Chazal said, do we have two terms? Ashrecha and tovlach, praised are you in this world, and it's good for you in the world to come. Now, one of the challenges that we face in our day and age is that people are never happy with what they have. Western society trains us to always want more. And it's not a new thing, this desire for more. The Medrash quotes Rabbi Meir, who said, a baby is born, his fists are always clenched. And when a person dies, his hands are always open. And the reason is because when a person is born, he has the desire to grab everything. And when he dies, he is indicating, I didn't get anything. Every person is born thinking I'll get everything and dies realizing I got nothing. So the truth is that we spend our lives running after wealth and not everyone attains wealth. And even those that have wealth and assets, most people don't take the time to enjoy their wealth, but rather they spend their life in pursuit of greater wealth. The pasuk says, "Ohev kesef, one who loves money, lo yisba kesef, will never be satiated for money." Chazal say, "In adam met v'chatzi tavato biyado." You won't find a person on his deathbed who will say that he attained half of his desire in this world. We always think, "I'll just get that," but if we're focused on what we want, if it's our material desires that guide us, then we will spend a life of hunger. A life always desiring. So where is wealth? Just because a person has money doesn't mean he has wealth. A person could have money and spend his life chasing after wealth. Or, as the Declaration of the United States says, we have the right to spend our lives in pursuit of happiness. Are you pursuing it or do you have it? Americans spend their lives pursuing it. Where is it? When a person spends his life pursuing happiness, he will look at others and he will desire what they have. He will more easily cheat other people in business and he could easily come to theft and easily come to a point where he hates other people. He technically loses this world and the world to come. The pasuk describes in Tehillim, Shavlachem mashkimei kum me'achrei shevet ochlei lechem ma'atzavim. It's worthless for you to wake up early and go to sleep late at night when you eat bread that is called lechem ha'atzavim, bread of sorrow, atzev, bread that is filled with fear, bread that is filled with desire, a person who's just not happy with what he has. And a person who in his pursuit for more and more wealth arouses the jealousy of others, the hatred of others, a person who builds his home in this way, this is a pasuk, this is a home that is not built by Hashem. And David HaMelech said, "Im Hashem lo yivnevait," if you don't have Hashem in the building of a home, "shavam luvo navbo," then the people who build it are working for naught. So what is a house that is built by Hashem? That the next chapter describes, Ashrei kol yirei Hashem ha'olech bidrachav. Praised are those who fear Hashem, go in His ways. What are Hashem's ways? Justice, happiness, true joy. How does a person merit that? When he leads a life the way David the Melech described, Yigia kapecha ki tochel. When a person consumes the bread that is a product of his own toils. He's not interested in getting what other people worked for. He's interested in earning an honest living and enjoying the honest living he's earned. And then he gets what we said earlier, Ashrecha, praised are you in this world, because in this world a person can enjoy what he has. He isn't spending his life looking to live off of others. He doesn't have jealousy of others. He's happy to live, and he's happy that others are living. V'tov lach, and it'll be good for him in the world to come, because he's lived up to his job in this world. Not everyone merits to get the wealth that is imagined. You want to get wealth of having $1 million, not everyone can get that. But everyone can merit to have true wealth. Wealth that is happiness, wealth that is joy, wealth that comes with justice, wealth that Hashem holds on to for those who lead just lives. There's a story about a man who met the Rebbe from Kotsk. And he and the Rebbe from Kotsk, they were classmates. And this man had become extraordinarily wealthy. So he met the Rebbe from Kotsk and he said, Rebbe, you're such a pious man. Where's your Olam Hazeh? How come you can't enjoy life a little bit? You know you're a Rebbe, I know you're a big Talmid Chacham, you've learned a lot, you've taught a lot, but where do you have anything in this world? So the Rebbe from Kotsk, who was known for his sharpness, he said, and tell me, where is your Olam Hazeh? Where are you enjoying this world? The man said, Rebbe, come on, what do you mean? Look at my chariots, look at my buildings, look at my wealth, look at the clothing I wear, look at the watch I use. What do you mean, where's my Olam Hazeh?
Look at my trophy.
The Rebbe from Kotsk answered him, he said, no, that's your Olam Haba. Where's your Olam Hazeh? You're consuming anything you had left for the world to come. So what do you have left for this world? All of that is instead of the world to come. We have to know what we're aspiring for in life. What is the wealth that we can attain that's within our reach? The greatest potential for attaining this wealth is a young couple. When you guys start out, a young couple that's laying the foundation for their house, so then you're setting the tree, you're setting the path. And it's easier to decide what are going to be the values for the home. And it's easier because people are also more open when they're freshly married. They haven't yet had to work hard for a living, and they haven't yet sunk themselves in that cauldron that people get scorched in life. They haven't yet been burnt. And their heart is open for true love, and their soul is open to attain true good. The dream of true happiness still lies in their heart. Every couple, when they get married, thinks that their Friday afternoon is not going to be pressured. They're going to enter Shabbos calmly. And the truth is, what's standing in their way? In Be'ezrat Hashem, we will explore next week tremendous practical advice that Rav Eliyahu Kitov gives to starting out couples as to how to lead their lives in accordance with the Torah principles and have truly happy lives, truly wealthy lives. Be'ezrat Hashem next week.